Hello and welcome to Master of Our Domain, the podcast which is allegedly about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld. I'm Milo Edwards, someone who's never seen Seinfeld, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host Phoebe Roy.
Hello.
That is all she ever says. And this time, it's Movie Corner. The Movie Corner theme tune will now play. We are joined by international expert Patrick Wyman, friend of the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're all right. It's weird to have you on Master of Our Domain again because it feels like the other podcast that we do. And I had to, for a minute, remind myself which podcast it was.
This is my question for you all. How do you keep it straight? And you do as many pods as you do.
Yeah.
How do you keep them all straight in your head? Do you have some sort of grid system? Like, what's this look like?
I think it's mostly just because it's different people, which is why
I wait for us to just get going and then
then you figure it out.
you're just getting in there and raw dogging the pods.
I use context clues to work out what I'm going to be doing.
That's right. Yeah, we're raw dogging it, unlike the dogs of Arizona who cannot raw dog.
Due to the hot pavements. Due to the exceptionally hot pavement. Yeah, like every summer there's a story about how some unhoused person has a drug overdose and falls onto the sidewalk and then ends up in the hospital with third degree burns. Like that every year there are multiple stories like that. Mm.
Oh,
the longer I live here, like I really like living in Phoenix, but this whole city is an act of hubris against God. It should not exist. It's like, it is so clearly the kind of thing when you're going to be watching a documentary 500 years from now, and they're going to be like, what were they thinking building a city in this place? What spirit of madness possessed them?
I mean, certainly if I didn't want my city to be consumed by flames, I probably wouldn't name it after the Firebird, because that feels like a fuck you to God.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I have no idea whether this is true or not, but I once heard that Phoenix was named as such by ex-Confederates in the aftermath of the Civil War. So that was what was supposed to be rising from the flames, which would make a lot of sense given the politics of Arizona. Mm. I don't know if that's true or not, but
I heard it was named after Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix. They just really loved that one song and they were like, we should build a city in the desert about it.
That's a fucking deep late 2000s indie pop cut right there, man. Not everybody's going to get that one, but I'm telling you, it tickled me pink.
Oh, there we go. That is the Patrick Wyman promise. You can take that to the bank. But we are not here to talk about late 2000s indie pop rockers Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix. We are here to talk about early 2010s film Centurion. In fact, the earliest you can get in the 2010s, 2010. That's, you know, David Cameron has just been elected. Picture that. And hall boy is Michael Fassbender in a bad movie.
We are in the midst of Clegmania.
Yeah. I agree with Nick is all the rage.
Speaking of some real deep politics cuts here, it feels like in Rishi Sunak's world, what a more innocent time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I am 17 years old.
All right.
Yeah.
Wait, okay. You sound like, would you say I am 17 years old? You sound like the blue guy in Watchmen, like talking, like looking back at this from the solitude of Mars.
I don't know enough about Watchmen to understand this reference, but it feels like neither do you, given that you opened with the blue guy.
That's his name. That's his special superhero. He's Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah. Dr. Manhattan.
That's what I thought it was.
But if it wasn't Dr. Manhattan and I said Dr. Manhattan, think about how fucking stupid that would sound.
It's Dr. Like fucking Brooklyn. I'm Dr. Long Island.
This is my concern. I mean, okay, so I've read Watchmen like three times and I watched the TV series recently. The one they did on HBO or Max or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
And all I remember is that he has a giant blue penis. That's the oh. that's
Yeah, that's in the movie as well. But that's what happens when you spend, you know, when you spend 7 years at Manhattan Medical School.
That's true. Yeah, you end up with a giant glowing blue penis. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, what, like, do you want him to have a normal sized penis? That'd
if he was Mr. Manhattan, it would just be normal.
No, his dick has a separate PhD.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty hard dick. Yeah. That's also fun because it's like faint praise. Like, yeah, do you want to see my dick? It's pretty hard. It's not as hard as it could be.
So, you know, reasonable. This is the real like glass half full or half empty penis thing is like, is it pretty hard or is it kind of flaccid?
Like, it's like, hard enough. Like, you don't need to thumb it in. It could be harder.
It's like a 7.5 on the Mohs scale. It's not like diamond, but it's not like chalk.
No, that's not going to come apart in your hands.
Diamond hard dick is terrifying.
That's like,
this thing could cut through steel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're using the Mohs scale of hardness. I'm using Maslow's hierarchy of boners. The ones you need the most, the ones that fulfill basic needs, through to the more self-actualizing boners.
Well, speaking of self-actualizing boners, it's speaking of, like, I'm going to connect this to the film. I'm going to do it. I think this movie is a really, really good object lesson in why people don't really make films about the Roman military. When you've got your swords and sandals films, you've got to have the titty interlude to, like, you can't just have an hour and a half of quickly inuring kind of ultra violence. You've got to have a bit in the middle where there's a kind of girl in a tunic and she takes the tunic off and there are just like tits everywhere because otherwise it's just like, this is boring. This is sort of horrible and also boring.
This is the balance that Spartacus really struck well.
Yeah.
Was a perfect ratio of excessive gore to excessive titties.
Yeah, you need a tit to decapitation ratio.
Yeah. Rome understood this.
Rome understood
this. They did. Yeah. Extraordinarily well. Yeah, yeah. In fact, we might go so far as to say that the entire basis of the Roman social order was the perfect ratio of titties to ultraviolence.
Yeah.
You got to see the Emperor Hadrian's blue penis.
We don't even. Got to see the kind of the Pictish chief's woad covered penis.
Yeah, actually, his penis would be blue. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So this has always been my question when ancient texts talked about like the Celts or Gali or whatever or Picts or whatever going into battle naked, like, were the dicks also painted? I'm just asking questions.
I've never received a good answer to this.
No, I mean, what exactly was painted?
It's difficult to get full coverage. Like, you're late for the battle already, and then you're going like, Sandra, can you get the back of my sack with the wood? I can't quite.
Yeah, this. You forgot my grundle. We forgot the grundle.
Oh, not the grundle.
There's always just like one square in their lower back that they just can't get it.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's like when you can't reach the spot to get the sunscreen on it and you end up with that one little bit. Yeah. It's embarrassing.
Yeah, you wait until your mate goes to sleep and then you draw a pair of tits on their back with woad and then they get
Pictish sleepover.
Yeah,
that's nice. Just sort of like the terrifying spell of seeing all these Picts in woad is like broken for Agricola when he sees like an unpainted gooch. Like, they just couldn't quite reach. And he's like, oh, these are but men, you know? I can defeat them in the usual way.
Were they truly supernatural creatures, they would have managed full coverage.
Maybe this is me. I just feel as though in a kind of like spears, swords, bows and arrow battle context is one of the last situations in which I would want my dick and balls out. It's asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would personally like them well covered.
Yeah.
And also, what's interesting for a film that is so violent as well, is it's also oddly, It's oddly squeamish about the nature of warfare and the nature of militarized violence as well. So like everyone who is killed horribly, but absolutely instantly. There's nobody like kind of dying of a kind of gangrenous wound in a tent. Yeah. Like there's nobody like kind of like shitting themselves to death of like dysentery. And
people like getting hit by arrows in the chest and keeling over dead like they've been shot in the head with a sniper rifle. Yeah.
You like you realize that guy would have survived for like 2.5 hours screaming the whole time, asking for water and saying mother in whatever language he spoke. Yeah. Like that's how that actually looked.
Yeah.
So
and also he's like blue and naked as well. So that's undignified.
Yeah. So is the hypothermia going to get him first or is it going to be the sepsis?
Yeah.
Well, you can't tell if he's hypothermic or not because he's blue.
That's an excellent, but that's why they did it. Yeah. Like red coats, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you can see the blood, couldn't see the hypothermia.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing they won't tell you is the blue man group are actually Picts. Some of the last surviving.
And have hypothermia.
Yeah.
A relict population.
That's why they love banging on bins and stuff so much.
Yeah.
Because they're spiritually British.
Yeah. So Phoebe, I absolutely love what you just said, because I think that's exactly right. And it gets at kind of the paradox of this movie, which is that it has like two interesting ideas, right? Like what if the Romans were oppressive colonizers, which absolutely fair take on the Roman Empire along the frontiers.
Yeah.
What if the Roman military were not good guys? As kind of a corollary to the first one. And second, what if you actually portrayed violence in an ancient battle as like what violence in an ancient battle looked like, which would have been fucking horrible, right? So two interesting ideas, and it manages to take them and make a profoundly uninteresting movie about them.
But not only is it a kind of interesting idea, like what if the Romans are the bad guys? What if they're violent colonizers? But what if there are violent colonizers that for some reason were also expected to sympathize with their idiotic Lord of the Rings style ragtag band of men trying to get home? So like, so they kind of make this sort of point that the Romans, particularly the Romans in Britain, are monsters, and the Romans in the frontiers behave in these kind of monstrous, barbaric ways. And then they're like, okay, so would you like to see 7 of them, 3 of whom look exactly the fucking same,
One of them is Noel Clark from Kid.
One of them is fucking Noel Clark trying to terrible time in the snow. It's basically watching like a university ski trip.
But with more facial scars.
With more facial scars. Well, I mean, it depends on the university.
University ski trip to Scotland would be very funny, in fairness.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that it's 2010. You know, Michael Fassbender and Dominic West are available for some reason for this movie. A bafflingly like a cast of people who have been in stuff that's much better than this have all been sucked in.
They're all the guy who played in Game of Thrones, who played Stannis Baratheon's right hand guy.
Yeah, Liam Cunningham, the Irish actor. Yeah,
so literally
one
all,
of those guys all, you cannot Reece, name, but who's been in loads of stuff, like William Fichtner.
Yeah, Reese Ahmed.
Yeah,
like this is like it's a good cast. Like there are some genuinely good actors in it, and they're all fucking slumming it. It's like
even Olga Kurylenko at this point is kind of hot property because she's just been in James Bond.
Also Hitman, I believe.
Yeah, the year before. They managed to make Olga Kurylenko look so weird in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's a deliberate choice, but it feels like if you're employing one of the hottest women in the world, certainly at the time for your movie, they weren't really making bank out of that, I feel.
No. I fear they did not exploit that possibility to its full potential. Also just the fact that she is by definition a non-speaking character, like I'm just like it's the whole movie is so tonally incoherent and thematically incoherent that like it's truly extraordinary how muddled all of that is. And it's trying to make a point, I'm sure, about, oh, there are not really any good guys here. These guys are bad guys. They're bad guys. The imperial violence t- turns the even the victims into monsters too, right? Like these are these are the things it's trying to say, but it doesn't say them well or impactfully.
No.
It just
makes you go like that's not Charlie XCX. It can't be. It's too early. It's too early. It does look like her though. It does.
Charlie XCX was still in Bishop Stortford at this point. She's still
She hadn't made it outside.
What is Charlie XCX?
Oh, interesting. She's a singer who looks like this character.
Yeah.
Okay. Charlie, I'll take your word for it.
I saw Charlie XCX perform as a teenager in Bishop Stortford under that name. At like I had some friend who was in a band who was playing the same. And it very, because you don't expect anyone from that environment to ever be famous. Certainly not under the same name and doing exactly the same thing.
I love the idea that Bishop Stortford as well has this kind of like Hadrian's Wall type quarantine around it. She hadn't made it that far. She hadn't fought her way out. Pat, I'm going to find you a picture of Charlie XCX just so you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
This isn't an insult, by the way. Charlie XCX is hot.
No, yeah. Sam Smith also from Bishop Stortford at the same time. Although I feel as though Sam Smith is more plausibly Bishop Stortford. Like there's something about Sam Smith on the world stage that doesn't feel quite right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's but you know, just I there's a lot going on there. But do you want to hear in the meantime, the budget of this movie, $12 million. The box office, and you can see every single one of those dollars on the screen. Mm-hmm. The box office receipts of this movie, $6.9 million.
That feels generous.
With that cast, you'd think you'd get like $20 million box office receipts just for turning up.
Okay, I think I've seen this person before.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Mm. All right.
Just some pretty good pop songs.
This is difficult for me. The my knowledge of popular culture is very much restricted. Like unless they have dated a famous athlete, chances are good, or they're like mega famous, then the chances of me knowing who they are not strong. I know who Billie Eilish is because she's got the voice of a dang angel, and I know who Miley Cyrus is because she's like slightly older and is kind of my generation. Otherwise it's tough going out there for me.
Are these your examples? This is what you got?
Billie Eilish, honestly.
Miley Cyrus, that's it.
Yeah. What about Millie
You
Vanilla?
Say that like you're Phoebe, think about the material conditions of my day-to-day existence.
Yeah, okay. Fair.
In what contexts am I encountering popular music enjoyed by young people?
This man can name all of the members of Paw Patrol.
I can't. But I can't tell you that I have never allowed Paw Patrol in my household.
Okay. Because it's propaganda.
That's right.
It is because it's a fucking fascist show and I will not have my children sympathizing with like my children get enough propaganda already. They don't need
live in Arizona.
Delivered. Yeah. Like this is Thin Blue Line Central, baby.
Your kids like, watching Paw Patrol being like, these dogs aren't even wearing shoes. This is ridiculous. How would they go about their duties?
Yeah, seriously, this is my children know how to recognize a plot hole. These are continuity errors.
Yeah,
I'm making parenthood tip notes on this.
There's always that bit in the Paw Patrol episode where they turn off their body cam, and that's when you know it's about to get real.
would they put tape over their badge number? That's when you know shit's gonna go downhill.
Sent in to deal with a campus protest.
Well, it's an irony that really because the original Paw Patrol was set up to curb dog union activity at like the end of the 19th century. So it's sort of quite an irony that the Paw Patrol union is now so powerful.
Well, and I mean, in some ways they can trace their descent to the bloodhounds that were used to track down escaped enslaved people.
That's right.
I hope you say this to your children.
No, I would say my spouse has a lot less tolerance for my musings on the ideology of children's programming.
Oh, well, that's fair. That's fair.
Well, you know, we spend a lot more money on the Paw Patrol than we do on the Wolf Brigade. And I tell you what,
these are the kinds of things that I have brought up, and there's a lot of like, why are you doing this? Why do you feel the need to say these things? I really like Daniel Tiger. That's my, I like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real good one for, especially like,
please,
age
Mr.
two
Tiger
to
was
four.
My father. Call me Daniel Tiger.
Or Danny T, as we call him in this household.
Mm-hmm. It's very funny. That is like if you asked a child to name a tiger, what they would call it. Daniel Tiger. Like, well, obviously his surname's got to be Tiger. So
yeah,
probably Daniel Tiger.
Yeah. No, that was Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, who came up with that.
Mm.
Yeah, I have many children's programming recommendations, Phoebe, but this may not be the context.
Perhaps not the context. I probably won't sit him down in front of Centurion, not because of the violence, but because it is fucking awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, my son did come out. I was watching this last night. My son was supposed to be asleep, and he came out and started looking at it with me. And I'm like, no, we shan't be continuing this with you in the room. Again, not because he's like, he did the, like, you know, when people post the shit that their kids say, and it's clearly not real. Mm-hmm. My son, I was like, oh, it's about the Roman Empire. And he's like, is that imperialism? I'm like, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, you're 7 and a half. I can't explain imperialism to you at 8:27 p.m. I just had two edibles. Yeah. Like, this is neither the time nor the place for this.
I can't explain Michael Fassbender's career moves to you.
Just like sitting there, just like, I'm not going to explain this. I'm simply too relaxed.
I'm
remember, like, son, nobody likes a pig.
You look down and like at some point somebody has kind of put some rubber galoshes on you, and you're like, when did these happen? Oh God.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
The one thing I will say for this movie is that if you view it as like the worst possible version of a Mad Max movie,
oh, interesting.
It's not terrible. So basically, like, they're
Mad Maximus.
Yeah. So you saw you saw Fury Road, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So when George Miller did those, he didn't write a script. He just did storyboards. And built the entire movie from the action sequences.
Okay.
So the fact that there is actual thematic connective tissue and character development is something that was a product of the action scenes, right? Like the way, like normally when you write a movie, you're writing a screenplay, and then the action scenes are the things that you kind of put in later. Like you're writing, oh, here's what happens in the action scene. But he built the entire movie outward from those long extended action sequences. Mm-hmm. This movie would have been a lot better had they done that, because that's what the movie is actually about. This entire movie is just like a way of stringing together some badass action sequences.
Mm. Yeah.
And especially chase scenes.
Although I have to say, I can't get behind what to me sounds like a defensive improv. That sounds to me like that's what you're working up towards. And I can't be doing.
No. I'm saying that most people are not George Miller.
Yeah.
Like, is that's basically what I'm saying, is that like the movie to make a movie like that work, that is basically, it's because it's basically a series of chase sequences. The core of the movie is these like four or five instances of people running from something or trying to get away from something or trying to get to something, which is not inherently a bad way to structure a movie. Right? Like there are much worse ways to do that. But a chase movie is very rarely a movie that has anything interesting to say thematically or about, you know, imperialism and colonialism, unless you're fucking George Miller.
Yeah.
If you're George Miller, then you can say interesting things in the context of a movie that's built around four or five extended chase sequences. If you're not George Miller, it's probably not going to go that well for you.
The director is a horror director, so that maybe a little bit.
He has got a baffling back catalog, because old Neil Marshall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know he did The Descent. What are some of the other ones he did?
He did Dog Soldiers, 2002, The Descent, as you say, Doomsday, Centurion, of course, Hellboy in 2019. I didn't know they made Hellboy again.
They did. With David Harbour. Was the one. Yeah, and it was so bad that it was barely even in theaters.
Right, okay. And The Reckoning in 2020, which looks extremely low budget, but is sort of a horror movie also. The more you read about this guy, the more he seems like the kind of guy you would meet in a branch of Games Workshop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Though he did direct one very well-reviewed episode of Westworld.
Oh.
Which episode of Westworld did he do?
I liked Westworld, or at least the first couple of seasons. I kind of lost track of it after that.
Oh, he directed The Stray. That is a fantastic episode of Westworld. I really enjoyed that one. Okay. So,
critical support for Neil Marshall.
Critical support. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this movie, I mean, like, first of all, the plot summary on Wikipedia is one of the longest I have ever seen, and nothing happens in this movie. Like, nothing you could really describe. I feel like it's just kind of, it's like events occur, but they're not really like, if you were like, what is the point or like the crux of this movie? It's really hard to put your finger on it. Like, because it starts off with Michael Fassbender has been captured by the barbarians, mm-hmm. and then he escapes, and then he goes back to the Romans, and then they're like, right, we're gonna go and fucking teach these Picts a lesson. And then they go up there, and then a bunch of them then get captured, including their general, Dominic West, the inventor of tuna.
Sore loser!
Yeah.
A great line read. Absolutely fucking chewing the scenery here.
Yeah, awesome. Also, all of the Picts are speaking Scots Gaelic, a language which, amusingly, was not spoken then or now.
Yep.
But also, none of the actors can speak it either. So it's all this like really like torturous line reads where they're kind of like reading it off the teleprompter.
It's fucking bad.
Yeah.
They do. They also do the when we meet the kind of the love interest, which is a very peculiar. It's a very peculiar little side plot, because at that point I was like, oh, finally someone in a tunic is going to take the tunic off and they're going to be some tits. But no tits at all.
No, she's a sort of manic pixie dream witch.
She is a manic pixie dream witch. And they do that thing where you are supposed to understand that she is speaking Latin, except she's doing it in a Scottish accent because she is a non-specific Briton, which is irksome.
I was taught the ablative absolute.
This is such a fucking weird... So you mentioned that this movie came out in 2010, and it's an incredibly a product of 2010, in the sense that it's this like mid the doldrums of the war on terror.
Tiny Temper is at the top of the charts.
Yeah, we've been doing this for a decade, and we're all kind of exhausted by the fact that it's still happening, and there's nothing any of us can do to stop. You know, global campaigns of violence in places that most folks are barely aware of. Mm. Like, there's
the Picts don't want us there. They don't want to be free.
The Picts don't want us there. The Picts don't want us in Mosul. Yeah. Is the message that I was getting from this movie?
What is Hadrian's Wall but an attempt to construct a kind of green zone?
Yeah, it's Hadrian's Wall as HESCO barrier.
Yeah.
is where we're going with that.
That's right.
So it's very much a product of that time. But also, you mentioned the manic pixie dream witch, and it's also impossible to understand that character if you don't have in mind like Garden State and Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Is like those are the contemporary models for that female character who's somehow written into this movie where it doesn't make sense that she's there. Like it's very strange that like that's a character archetype that was incredibly common at that particular point in time and is somehow shoehorned into this incoherent movie about imperialism that's also five chase scenes.
Yeah, it's very baffling because also when they set off after the Picts to start with Dominic West, they have this Pict woman who's like their like guide and tracker, and then she turns out to be secretly in league with the Picts. Because she's a Pict.
Because they keep sort of saying like, oh, you like monstrous traitor. It's like, are you all stupid? Are you genuinely all stupid? Why on earth would you not think that she was secretly planning to betray you all along?
And also, how did none of them ask the obvious question of who cut her tongue out? Because it feels like there's one really good candidate for that, and it would be the Romans. Yeah. And so like, if that's the background, I feel like they had an immense amount of trust in the tongueless Pictish tracker.
Yeah.
Like they should have asked more questions.
No, she seems like, why would she? No. Because like She didn't say that she could be trusted, but she looks, well, I mean, she doesn't look especially trustworthy either, but look, trust me, it's fine. I'm Dominic West. I invented tuna.
She looks exactly like Charlie 100.
So we have this kind of bizarre sort of like Saving Private Ryan style subplot. That's what I was leaning towards.
It's a very strange movie.
Yeah.
It's odd structurally, because it doesn't have, its act structure is basically incoherent. Mm-hmm. The movie doesn't really have like a clearly delineated midpoint. Its ideas about character development are also incoherent.
Yeah.
Because the only character who has an actual arc is Michael Fassbender, and that you can't have a single character who has an arc without antagonists who also have arcs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's like,
and also
nobody...
Fassbender's arc makes no sense.
Yeah.
No, none.
None.
Yeah.
None. So it's just like, but I did like some of the action scenes. So I'm going to throw that out there. I liked the way that they were like paced and shot. I liked the kind of the very short images. Mm-hmm. So there, I'm going to give it some praise on that front. But that's it. That's the only good thing I have to say about it.
It totally chickens out of making any point whatsoever, because we find out that Charlie XCX. What is that in numerals? I think it's funnier to call it that.
Well, it would be because XC would be 90, but then there would be an additional 10, so it's just 100.
So she'd
probably just be Charlie C in the Roman Empire.
Charlie 100, yeah. It's revealed as a kind of a
Charlie 100, a text you get from your dealer on Friday night.
That's right.
your ancient Roman dealer. Graffiti in the forum. Yeah. Like a snowflake chiseled into a pillar with XCX next to it.
Yeah, it's right next to a picture of a dick and a name, and it says Kinitis.
you end up like waiting in a tavern for 4 hours while you receive like kind of more and more lying texts about the fact that their chariot broke down.
Guy turning up in a horse and cart that's ludicrously low to the ground. He's bred like a Shetland pony with legs the length of a dachshund.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very slow.
It's very, very slow. So they do this kind of like this, the backstory of Charlie 100, and they say Etain, I think she's called. And there's this like absolutely hideous backstory, this horrible, horrible story about how she came to present herself as a sort of traitor to the Romans, and her whole family was all horribly, horribly killed, and then she was raped and had her tongue cut out. And this is sort of presented as a kind of a, this is why she betrayed you, as opposed to a, She's right to have betrayed you.
Oh, we're like, the bad guys.
Why are we now expected to watch several scenes of you kind of sitting around campfires and saying, I come from this bit of the empire, I come from that bit of the empire. Who fucking cares? You suck. You're terrible. I don't care for you. But this is presented as a kind of, as almost like a kind of throwaway backstory, as opposed to something that you are supposed to sort of sit with and reflect on. And but for some reason it sort of, but that scene sort of goes on for quite some time,
and there are multiple variations on it too. Like we get that scene like 3 or 4 times where we're supposed to be building sympathy and understanding for these Roman characters, but this is the thematically incoherent part, right? Is because right before one of those scenes they have the guy stand up and just slit the picked prisoner's throat. Mm. And we're like, clearly not a thing good guys do.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't understand, like it's possible to make an ambiguous, a movie that has ambiguous characters that still has clear thematic through lines. Mm. And yeah. this is a movie that has characters that aren't ambiguous, and the themes manage to be really muddled and unclear.
Yeah. A lot like the settings. Like, I just, when I was watching this movie, I was like, this movie has porn production values.
Mm.
Like, just every scene, like, the outdoor scenes are like, okay, every scene that's taking place, like, in or near a building looks like shit. There's the scenes in, like, the picked village look like out the back of the garden center where they sell, like, the Wendy houses and the rattan fence and stuff. Like, nothing in there looks real. The bit where, like, Dominic West is, like, chained to a post, and then they have this little fight scene between him and Etienne or whatever. Yeah, just it's hard to watch because everything feels like it should have the Brazzers logo on it.
No, I don't think the production value is that high. It's more like Bang Bus.
So, Michael Fassbender, armed with, you know, the trusty Gladius and his knowledge of the Pictish language, him and, Liam Cunningham and Noel Clark, they decide that they've got to rescue Dominic West. They don't succeed in doing so because, meanwhile, Dominic West has been made to fight Olga Kurylenko with a big spear.
While you were out, I worked out what Latin for Saving Private Ryan is.
Okay.
It is Salvet Miles Regulus. So you can jot that down.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, saving the regular soldier.
Well, because Regulus means like prince or little king, and that's also what Ryan means.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow. Well done, Phoebe. That's 10 points to Phoebe. I hope you're keeping score at home. And so, yeah, they're like, oh, we can't rescue Dominic West. He's been killed by the no tongue woman with the big spear.
Yeah. And again, like, are we supposed to like Dominic West? It's sort of not clear. He does.
I feel like we are, because he's supposed to be like the general who's also a tough guy, and the regular men, they like this guy.
They like this guy. He arm wrestles with the men, and you know, mm-hmm. and there's a whole bit where like a mess.
Not in a gay way. let's not imply that. It's 2010.
And the thing is that in Latin, no homo is just no homo.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely true.
Yeah,
there's a sort of bit where a messenger shows up and is like, oh, you know, I'm going to report you to your general. And he's like, turns out I am general. It's like, why is this bit in here? Unless you are supposed to kind of take something from it about his relationship with his legion. And he's getting a message from Agricola, from the commander, from the kind of the governor of Britain. And what I don't understand,
commander farmer,
that's right. What I don't, Gricks, big Gricks, that's what they call him, that's what his men call him.
Gricko
Gricko Dino Baz, they're all in the group chat. They're spreading rumors about the king dying. It's a suspect. What I don't understand is that we have at the beginning a kind of little sort of unscrolling kind of, oh, we're watching Lord of the Rings. Oh no, we're not at all. Bit about, you know, oh, the year is 117 AD. We are losing. The Romans are losing the battle against the Picts. So what I don't understand is, if you're gonna have a real guy who turns out to be like a bit of a piece of shit, by the way, you're going to have a real guy. Why not have a real guy who is still alive in 117 AD? Or make it kind of, I don't know, 30 odd years earlier when Agricola was, because Agricola was dead. He was absolutely dead by 117. And we, like,
there's no one watching this movie knows who Agricola is anyway.
So why,
I think we might be the only three people who've ever watched this movie who know who Agricola is.
Exactly. So why bother with this, like, one?
Because they need to line it up with Hadrian building a wall.
But then why? But that's then why not just have the governor or the commander being whoever it was that was the governor and commander, like under Hadrian building the wall?
Because the guy read the Agricola, the screenwriter read the Agricola.
That cannot be true. Even I haven't properly read it.
It's an off. I mean,
you're always meaning to get around to it. It's like infinite jest, you know. You take it with you
on holiday,
but you just end up scrolling TikTok.
I read it. To my great and everlasting shame, I read it on a beach. That's in Los Angeles.
This tracks with what with everything else I know about.
When I was just an coming up to you, chewing the arm of their sunglasses, like, are you reading the?
What you reading?
Yeah, no. Let me tell you.
That's so hot.
Any success that I had with women in my late teens and early 20s was in spite of and not.
It was down to the Agricola. That's like, this is the first pickup artist manual.
He's probably like my favorite Roman military commander.
Your favorite.
That's Varus slander, man. That's Varus slander.
He's not.
Well,
my
he should have given back those legions. Like, why did he keep them?
Why did he keep them?
You don't go into the Teutoburg forest. Like, why would you do that? That's crazy. There's Germans in there.
There were like half a dozen women who sounded exactly like that in my undergraduate classes. That was, because I went to college in Southern California.
I see.
Yeah.
This was the common accent.
Go into the forest, but I guess I'm built different.
Yeah. You go into the forest, you take them like a cake or something. Because they were really mad that Varus was there. Because it's like rude. Like, he came into their forest.
Is that a joke on a Black Forest cake? Or are you just...
That would be fun, wouldn't it? Like a gâteau.
Yeah.
That's why it's named after.
Don't tip it! And you open up the box and there's just like cream and like cherry jam like all over the bottom. You're like, oh. Yeah. You know what's going to happen?
That's why they killed
it. Exactly. That's the real story behind the Teutoburg Forest.
It wasn't that he was doing an imperialism. It was that he fucked up the cake situation.
Because he fucked up the cake situation. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing Germans hate more.
That's why you've got to write on the box this way up. Otherwise.
Yeah. The Germans, shockingly okay with imperialism, not okay with cake
fucking
problems.
Up your cake. Yes.
Reminded me of a pizza I once had delivered in Moscow, where like they just sent an Uzbek guy to deliver the pizza, who I think had just never eaten a pizza before. And that's just such a plausible Uzbek vibe. I just feel like it's such a like, that there's certain parts of like the former Soviet Union, which are just, I think they're some of the most insular places on Earth. Mm-hmm. And so he just carried the pizza like sideways under his arm, which is kind of logical if you've never encountered a pizza before. And so what arrived was just a bread disc and then like a corner full of like meat, cheese and tomato sauce, which had like congealed.
So it's funny you say that because I have a friend who went to Uzbekistan to do research. Mm-hmm. She was researching gender stuff and gender relations and gender norms in Uzbekistan, and she was conducting interviews with people, and like she said that was very much the vibe, is that like there were certain places where people had clearly had contact with the outside world, but that was not the case through most of Uzbekistan. Like that it was just like that it was one of the more isolated places she'd ever been.
Yeah,
super interesting.
So that probably was the first time that guy had ever carried a pizza,
potentially.
And then there he was, learning by doing.
You're definitely supposed to. Sorry to like, this is a flawless link. You're definitely supposed to like or at least sympathize with Dominic West, the general. So it's completely mysterious why Agricola is like kind of the only guy who's a real guy. Like the Pictish chief who's like whose little boy dies, who's called Gorgolon. And so far as I'm aware, this is not. And this is not a Pictish name. My only familiarity with a Gorgolon is there's a Gorgolon in like one of the Arthurian romances who is a werewolf. He's like one of the only like named werewolves in the whole of literature.
I assume that they had gotten the name from like the villain of an 80s children's cartoon.
That's probably
Gargamel.
What
the bad guy in the Smurfs? Smurfs. Yeah.
Well, the pigs are like Smurfs. That's why they're blue.
Also blue. It comes full circle.
The Smurfs are picked.
It comes full circle.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
and the Moomins are the Iceni. But that's what no one wants you to know. Yeah. The depiction of the pics, because also all the pics are just kind of like they're just sort of dressed like cavemen. There's kind of, I don't know how much research they did on costuming, but it all just feels a bit slapdashly put together. So basically, Dominic West dies, and then One of them on the way out, one of the little shifty Roman soldiers, he like strangles the king's son because he was about to tell all the Picts that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the king gets really mad. He's like, well, now you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Right.
As if he wasn't going to kill them before.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck?
Mm.
Did he need extra motivation?
And he's like, yeah, I'm going to send my cock destroyers after you. He has it. So like any reasonable Pictish king, he has a team of female assassins.
Yes, he does.
That he sends after all of his enemies, which I feel like I don't know a lot about Pictish society, but I feel as though your kind of Pict village ruler's first move in this scenario would not be to get me the most Amazonian women we have. And let's send them after these Romans.
It's like it's strange, isn't it? Because like you definitely get this idea that like that at least part of the point they're trying to make is that barbarism is like a construct, right? It's something which is like set up in opposition to whoever it is who is like, you know, like building the sanitation systems and sort of writing down history. So that's why what's happened to Etain and her family is so kind of like deliberately kind of like barbaric and monstrous. It's like what does it mean? Like, what does it mean to be barbaric? Like, what you're building a fucking hill with a temple on it everywhere you go. Does that mean that you are not a barbarian because they're still behaving like barbarians at their frontiers? So like, are these people barbarians, or you know, like, or is that just like, that's just like through the Roman lens? And then the decision is, yeah, no, they fucking are. Fucking look at them.
Yeah.
Look at how incredibly barbaric they are. Like they kind of just sort of growl at each other. Look at this tart with the dreadlocks. Like, look, shit, you wouldn't want to come across her.
Yeah.
So it's sort of asking the question, like, sort of, who is the real barbarians? I'll tell you who. It's the fucking Picts. That's who.
Yeah. It's very funny with anything about like the ancient world, where you get like these different kind of genres of like, you've got something like Rome, where it's like they've like read some primary sources, mm-hmm. and then you've got something like Troy or Alexander, where it's like they've read some books about this, and then you've got movies like this, where it's like they've watched Xena Warrior Princess.
They've watched Xena Warrior Princess, and for some reason read the Agricola.
yeah it's like they're just importing just any fantasy stuff that they like the look of into like just an ancient Roman context.
But this was a common thing in like for whatever reason in the 2000s there were a whole bunch of these movies. So there's the King Arthur one with Clive Owen, which fucking rules. I love that movie, but it for entirely different reasons. The
Children of Table.
Yeah, there was one called like The Last Legion that was supposed to be about Romulus Augustulus, but was also in Britain and then also somehow included King Arthur.
What?
Yeah, it's fucking
Why
didn't
we watch that?
Because it's so much worse than this. It's so much worse.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
How? What? The sliders are already at zero. What did they do?
See, this is your problem, Milo. Is you think that this is the sliders are zero? You have no idea how bad it can get.
Okay,
this is like that. Your taste is too strong. Your taste is too good.
I think
you need to wallow with me.
I think the thing is, I'm a sucker for just a crumb of production value. Mm. That's the thing. I can tolerate a stupid plot. I can tolerate like a bad script, like all of that kind of. But just like. It's just how bad this movie looks.
As long
like
as
it's
you
impossible.
Don't see the bang chariot slowly hoving into view on the...
yeah. You cannot lose yourself in this movie even for a second, because like everything looks like it's been wheeled directly out of Home Depot and onto the set. Like it looks so bad.
This was one of those movies, again, a product of its time, where they're like, we got fucking drones now. Mm. We got drones, and we're gonna do some drone shots. And like that's supposed to make up for the fact that they could barely cobble together a set.
But there's something I like about that as well. Like I actually really like it when there is evidence of a new piece of technology in a film. Like if you watch films from when Not like, because like obviously like CGI has been around for a while, but like from when CGI started to get like kind of really quite sort of sophisticated in terms of like, in terms of the rendering. And you can tell that like a scene that is filmed in London for some reason has the Houses of Parliament as rendering, because, well, they could do it, so why not just, so why not just do it? And then like kind of sort of like,
yeah,
look,
yeah, yeah. And for some reason Tower Bridge is next to the Houses of Parliament,
just like just draw it in there, get like this kind of sort of pack of Australians in a room and then just like get them all to kind of render London. They're like, ah, I don't know, I can do you Earl's Court, that's it, that's all I can do for you.
Yeah, I've drawn you Olympia.
Yeah. And you can see this as well if you like, if you watch like a film from like when they sort of started like bringing in color, that there was like literally every single film had like some kind of terrible like kind of fire scene in it, because yellows and oranges looked the best in Technicolor, so they would just like try and have like a
I'm on fire, see.
Yeah, exactly. So they would try and have like a kind of fire scene no matter how ridiculous or inappropriate to the plot and yeah, and like in the early 2010s they're like, oh, we got drones now. Because this came out the year before, either the year before, maybe the same year as The Eagle, which I thought was quite good. I remember being quite good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've not seen that one.
It's a weird movie, because it's not the movie that you think it's going to be. Like, and I think it was pretty poorly marketed. Mm. It's basically a buddy movie that's kind of set in Rome. Yeah. And it's about two very different people coming to terms with one another. And Channing Tatum shouldn't work in it, but somehow does. You can't. And if you're just looking at the marketing of it and like you're watching the trailer for it, it seems utterly absurd. But then you watch the movie and you're like, oh, yeah, this solid
film.
Yeah,
it's got Jamie Bell in it as well. We should have watched that.
Shit. Okay, but think about
be in the Roman Legion. You're just a boy from the north.
But look at how much great material we've got now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
This movie fucking sucks.
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad.
Oh god, yeah, it's so bad.
Really
and like
bad.
The, and like the kind of the payoff at the end, which is a payoff kind of lifted sort of directly from a kind of Jason Statham film where he is like been like instructed to kind of like bump off various former SAS operatives so that they don't say what happened in the Middle East.
Yeah, that's right. The big secret.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. We should cover the rest of the plot really quickly. So basically, they are pursued by the cock destroyers of the Pictish king. They jump off cliffs into rivers and stuff, because basically they're running away on foot from guys who are on horses. So it's not going that well for them. This results in Noel Clarke and one of the other guys getting separated from the group. And the shifty one, because they're being chased by wolves, like cuts Noel Clarke's leg so that the wolves will eat him. This is an insane plot point. It's so unnecessary to the movie. It's purely in there to be like, yeah, look at this.
We've seen this character fucking strangle a child. We know he's shifty.
Yeah.
You don't need to kind of really kind of drill into his shiftiness.
And then when he rejoins them, Fassbender is like giving him the stink eye as though he knows about the wolf thing, even though that can't possibly be true. But then also even the like this, it's weird how they're all like, oh, you strangled a child, we're disowning you. Like they wouldn't have cared. Like he strangled a child so that they wouldn't get caught by the Picts, and also the child was a Pict, so they would not have cared even remotely.
Is that even in the their greatest concern about strangling the Pict child would have been the loss of potential value in a slave market. That's it, not like the horrible monstrous crime of having strangled a child. Like, have you seen the other shit that they got up to here? Like this is like these are not. It's fucking incoherent. I'm getting
not
more...
a child. That's a bit much, isn't it? Like, no, they're not doing that.
And then as they're running away, so the group that's with Fassbender, they meet the manic pixie dream witch who lives in a fucking Hansel and Gretel ass like cottage in the middle of the forest and is like got skulls everywhere.
Upscaled Shrek ass swamp.
Yeah,
exactly. And she does have a Scottish accent, much like Shrek. And then she like kind of agrees to look after them because like he speaks Pictish and she speaks Latin. Can I make it any more obvious? Meanwhile,
thank you, Avril.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, all the other Romans are like, oh, she's going to poison us with those mushrooms. And she's like, those aren't poisonous mushrooms. You don't know what poisonous mushrooms look like. It's like she's deep frying a Mars bar. We trust what sorcery
is.
Yeah,
don't worry about the mushroom. She's gonna give you a heart attack, is what she's gonna do.
We'll get you with the cholesterol. That's what you're not. We'll get you
with the lack of vitamin D.
Some of you guys are 30 already. The life expectancy here is nay more than 42. Just a lot. This is gonna come up later. There's like this weird like romance subplot between her and Fassbender, which is like Fassbender has not shown the remotest signs of being a more than one dimensional character at this point. Mm-hmm. And there's also
completely asexual, so far as we can tell.
Yeah, there's no indication that there's no reason why him and this woman would have anything in common or hit it off in any way. They're also there for like 10 hours. I don't know. It's baffling. They then run off. They rejoin the Shifty One. They find this abandoned... They're trying to get to the Roman garrison, which they then discover has been abandoned by Agricola, because Agricola's like, damn, these pigs, fucking... You can't live with them. You can't live without them. I'm out of here. And so then they decide to face down the various Amazonian women at this... like defunct Roman garrison.
We tried to face down the pits. All they did was talk about how much they hate Gareth Southgate.
Yeah, that's right. And so they managed to defeat them. And then they make it all the way back to Hadrian's Wall, at which point one of them gets shot by one of the garrison guys with an arrow because he's dressed like a Pict. This strikes me as the kind of thing as a Roman soldier you would be aware of. Like, don't like ride full pelt towards the Roman garrison while dressed as a Pict.
That's pretty basic.
Yeah. Like, this is the kind of thing in a movie you'd be like, oh, maybe like a civilian would do that. But like, surely if you've been in the Roman army for years, you'd be like, oh, that's probably asking for trouble.
Mm. Yeah. Given all of the willingness that they've shown previously in this movie, all of the restraint when it comes to killing random people, like you would think.
Yeah.
Think, wouldn't you?
And Fassbender's like, no!
No! No!
No! No! Yeah, it's very... Yeah, so towards
Except
the end of the movie, Fassbender
Latin,
starts...
So it's just, no!
Non. Yeah, he starts getting very Nicolas Cage in the remake of The Wicker Man. Like, it gets beyond... It's no longer chewing the scenery, it's gagging on the scenery. It's... Yeah, yeah. Killing me won't bring back your goddamn woe. Yeah. And then,
I look forward to never watching this movie again.
And then, so then he gets in, and then the Romans are like, oh boy, you're a hero of Rome. You must be hungry. Ah, joke's on you. We're going to kill you because no one can find out that actually the Roman Knights Legion were pussies.
I mean, like, this is the thing, listeners. Like, if you have not seen this film, which I assume you haven't, and you don't have to either. This sounds like Milo is kind of making that up or paraphrasing. It's more or less the exact line.
It's more or less direct quote.
It's more or less a piece of the dialogue.
And they send in a woman to like and he kills them, and then he's like, got her by the neck, and he's like, and she's like, where will you go? And he's like, where I belong. And then the next thing you see is him turning up to the fucking cottage in the woods. Like, what? Like, sorry, what?
Just like,
that's the plan?
Just on the subject of the terrible script, like they just have kind of people sort of talking kind of normally. They do this thing of like kind of the sort of slightly kind of anachronistic sort of crudity and stuff, which people love doing with anything which sort of depicts Romans. But then like every so often, someone will say something which is the most like fan fiction like thing that you sort of like ever heard. And we have fucking the Manic Pixie Dream Witch. Saying something about Charlie 100, who Michael Fassbender kills, by the way. He faces her down and kills her. So, which sort of feels like a little bit like, oh, okay, well, all right. So I guess that's done. And she's talking about, she's like, oh, well, if Etain's after you, then you're all fucked, because her soul is an empty vessel and only Roman blood can fill it. And you're like, what? What on earth does that mean? Where did that even come from? Mm-hmm. That's such a weird line to stick in the middle of this film.
I'm trying to fill up my soul.
I'm trying to fill up my vessel.
Just looking for a bit of Roman blood, if that's possible.
Just a little. It doesn't have to be all of it. Just a little prep. It's fine.
Just anything. Just, every just little just helps,
little,
honestly.
Just a little bit. You fucking English bastards.
Yeah. doing those like finger prick lancets.
Yeah.
Just to like, because I'm like a humane pick. Like, I do need Roman blood, but I don't want there to be like undue suffering.
Humane.
Yeah, it's like those movies where you've got like the vampires who don't want to kill humans, so they're all like, you know, they're like going to the blood bank or whatever. That should be, yeah, the picks are like, yeah, we just gotta draw a little bit of blood, don't worry.
It's for my vessel.
What a fucking weird movie.
For empty vessel of my soul.
Just imagine being that the manic pixie dream wish, and then just like Fassbender turns up again like 4 days later, and you're just like, oh, it was more of a friend's vibe for me, actually. Yeah.
I really wasn't feeling the spark, but it was so nice to meet you. You seem great.
Yeah. And also, like, it's the ancient world. Just like, assume an identity, disappear, go somewhere. Like, what? Like, why would you be like, no, I guess I just have to stay in Pictland now?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Roman Empire is such a big place. Like, you know what's nice? Yeah. Fucking Byzantium. Go to Byzantium.
Yeah.
Go to Numidia. Numidia's nice. Yeah. Like, you think anybody in Tuscany is gonna know who you are? Like, come on, man.
Because they've not bothered to do like a Such Noble Savages arc. Like, they've not bothered to do a thing where like, he comes to respect the Picts through the, like, he hates the Picts beginning to end.
He just wants to shag this one particular Pict.
Yeah. So his arc is supposed to be disillusionment with the Roman Imperial project, right? Like, it's just incoherent. He's only disillusioned with the project because of the impact on him personally.
Disillusioned with an Imperial project, but just like somewhere that's like, you know, a bit nicer and has like slightly better amenities. Like you said, Pat, no one in Byzantium is going to be kind of like looking at a kind of sort of widely distributed wanted poster. Just like, well, hang on. This is somebody who is disillusioned with the Roman Imperial project. Get him.
Mm-hmm. That's the guy.
Get him, lads.
That's the guy.
I recognize him.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, how many badly constructed Home Depot villages out of five are we rating this movie?
For me, it's a 2, purely because I like the action scenes, and some of the chase scenes are like viewed entirely in isolation as context-free pieces of action cinema. I'm okay with them.
Okay. All right. Phoebe?
I reckon also a 2, and I'm rounding that up from 1.5 because I do acknowledge that Pat has now quite well taken his revenge on us for making him watch Alexander.
Yes.
So,
there was a little bit of that in here.
Has happened here, and I, you know, game recognizes game.
Also, so one quick follow-up on that.
Mm-hmm.
If we were being truly fair, given the fucking length of Alexander, I would owe you another one.
Yeah. We've got to watch The Lost Legion as well.
Oh, God, no, No, absolutely not.
Even Pat's drawing the line at that. Yeah,
no,
That's against the Geneva Convention.
Yeah. More of a series of suggestions, really.
Yeah. I think it might have to be a 1. Because I gave something a 2 on Movie Corner last week, and it was better than this. And I feel like I have to keep the ratings consistent.
Else will your audience respect you if they don't know that your rating system is consistent?
Exactly. This movie was a real slog.
It was fucking bad.
Yeah. Like, I've watched some bad movies. This one was really just like, what is going on? Yeah. And it remains just only to thank Pat very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. No matter how bad the movie is, I enjoy talking about it with you guys.
Oh, it's nice. Always a delight.
It's always so fun.
Our true pleasure. Yeah, Pat is the little shoes to our doggy feet on a hot summer's day in Arizona.
That's one of the nicest things anybody's ever said to me.
Is there anything you'd like to plug to the loyal hogs?
I don't know where I am or what I'm doing really. I'm still making Tides of History. I'm finishing up my book draft. I'm about 3/4 of the way done with it. But my brain is mush. It's paste. There's nothing in there. Not a dang
just
thing.
A little bit of paste.
Milo, by the time this is out, will Rome 2 be out?
Potentially, yeah. Hey, if you're listening to this, and I tell you what, we'll cut this if it's not. And if you're listening to this, season 2 of Rome, the podcast about HBO's 2007 season 2 of the show Rome, is out now with me, Phoebe, and Patrick. Look at that. It's almost as though we planned this. So if you enjoyed this and would like to hear us talk about a better piece of media about the ancient world, aka Rome season 2, then check that out. It's going to be available as a download on Patreon. So it's a one, it's not a subscription. You pay much like the previous season, but we're moving it to Patreon. You pay once, you get the whole season, or you'll probably be able to pay for the individual episodes if you prefer to do it that way also. Yeah, thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.